On radio, online and mobile. You're with SBS Radio.
This is SBS World News Radio. I'm Greg Dyatt.
And I'm Michael Tomalaris. Coming up tonight, Andrew Wilkie uses parliamentary privilege to air serious allegations from whistleblowers against Melbourne's Crown Casino.
There's software manipulation to increase gambler losses even further, in particular on weekends when the number of naive, first-time and casual users is obviously much greater.
Crown has issued a statement rejecting the allegations and is calling on Andrew Wilkie to provide the authorities with all the relevant information.
Also tonight, the Philippines president declares a victory.
I hereby declare Marawi City liberated from the terrorist influence.
And Western-backed Syrian forces and their allies retake the last IS stronghold, the Syrian city of Raqqa.
All those stories and more coming up in the next 30 minutes.
It's 6 o'clock. Good evening. With the news, I'm Mike Tomalaris. One day after the release of the federal government's new energy policy, the argument continues over the promised savings. The government says its national energy guarantee will save households up to $115 per year between 2020 and 2030. The Labor Party says it could support the national energy guarantee, but has serious doubts about the promises on both power price cuts and emission cuts. Whilst defending the projected price cuts, Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull is also pointing to his abolition of subsidies for wind and solar generators from 2020 as a factor that will drive down prices.
One thing we can guarantee is that if you impose a $66 billion subsidy on the Australian energy sector and you get the taxpayers to pay for that, you can guarantee that electricity bills are going to be higher.
The opposition says policy is being made up on the run, calling it a band-aid plan. Opposition leader Bill Shorten is pointing to a comment from Energy Security Board Chairman Kerry Schott, who says price drops can't be guaranteed. Mr. Shorten is also referencing the lack of specific modelling of the National Energy Guarantee's annual impact, whilst lampooning the volume of the projected price drop in the first place.
The government has not modelled its impact on business, has not modelled its impact on renewable energy jobs, has not modelled its impact on the broader economy, has not modelled its impact on households. Why should Australians believe anything that this Prime Minister says about a lousy 50-cent saving in people's power bills?
Former employees of Melbourne's Crown Casino have accused the organisation of misconduct. Independent MP Andrew Wilkie has tabled evidence in Parliament and used parliamentary privilege to say the whistleblowers alleged Crown allowed the use of illegal drugs at its casino, covered up domestic violence and turned a blind eye to staff gambling at the venue. He said he was horrified to learn that the Victoria Commission for Gaming and Liquor Regulation has allegedly done nothing to stop criminal misconduct. Mr. Wilkie told Parliament he's been investigating allegations of misconduct at Crown for some time.
For example, the whistleblowers allege illegal machine tampering, including the disabling of lower bet options and the modifying of buttons to allow prohibited autoplay, both of which increase gambler losses. Moreover, there's software manipulation to increase gambler losses even further, in particular on weekends when the number of naive, first-time and casual users is obviously much greater.
Crown says it rejects the allegations. Crown is calling on Mr. Wilkie to immediately provide all the information relating to the alleged matters to the relevant authorities. Overseas, and China's president has made a rare acknowledgement of his country's severe economic challenges. Xi Jinping has spoken as the country's Communist Party Congress has opened in the Chinese capital, Beijing. He's admitted a widening income gap in the country and says problems in employment, education and medical care, amongst other areas, have been insufficiently addressed. An explosion that's hit a vehicle has killed at least four members of Pakistan's security forces. The incident happened in the southwestern city of Quetta. Two passers-by have also been killed. The vehicle, a truck, was carrying police recruits. An investigation is underway at the scene. It's unknown yet if the incident in the troubled area of Pakistan was a suicide bombing. Former Australian Greens federal leader Bob Brown has won a bid to in the nation's highest court to overturn Tasmania's anti-protest laws. Dr. Brown was arrested while filming a video about an anti-logging protest at Laponia State Forest in northwest Tasmania in January 2016. He claimed the law under which was arrested was invalid, and the High Court of Australia has ruled in his favour. Former US presidential candidate and Secretary of State Hillary Clinton has used a trip to South Korea to criticise US President Donald Trump's handling of the present North Korea crisis. Ms. Clinton says the US should be getting parties in the North Korean crisis to the negotiating table, but instead, the current US administration is sometimes raising tensions, which is disturbing the nation's fiendism and is counterproductive.
I am worried about some of the recent actions from the new administration that seem to raise tensions. Our allies are now expressing concerns about America's credibility and reliability. And by the way, picking fights with Kim Jong-un just puts a smile on his face.
A quick look at tomorrow's weather. Perth mostly sunny, a top of 25. In Adelaide, an early shower or two, 23. Melbourne, showers, possible storm, 25. In Sydney, mostly sunny, a top of 26. Brisbane, possible showers, 25. And Darwin, partly cloudy, 35 degrees. And Greg, more on these stories coming up on SBS World News at 6:30 with Janice Peterson.
Thanks, Michael. Right across Australia, this is SBS World News Radio, 7 past 6. As you heard there in the news, apparent whistleblowers have made damning claims against one of Australia's most prestigious casinos, accusing it of misconduct, a claim the casino rejects. The explosive revelations have been tabled in federal parliament by independent MP Andrew Wilkie, who's now calling for a thorough investigation. Aileen Phillips has the details.
Melbourne's Crown Casino has been embroiled in scandal as former staff members come forward with startling claims.
We blanked out the centre buttons, so you could only choose the lower option and the highest option. So anything in between, the player was no longer given that option to be able to choose what they wanted to play.
That's audio from a video uploaded online of one of the three former Crown staff turned whistleblowers. The video forms part of the information that's been gathered through the Pokey Leaks campaign launched last year by Andrew Wilkie and Senator Nick Xenophon with the aim of exposing unethical and dodgy practices in the gaming and gambling industries. The interview with the trio formed what's believed to be the first time ever video evidence was tabled in Parliament. Under parliamentary privilege, independent MP Andrew Wilkie elaborated.
The whistleblowers allege illegal machine tampering, including the disabling of lower bet options and the modifying of buttons to allow prohibited autoplay, both of which increase gambler losses. Moreover, there's software manipulation to increase gambler losses even further, in particular on weekends when the number of naive first-time and casual users is obviously much greater.
The Tasmanian MP says the former staff alleged the Victorian regulator knew about much of the alleged misconduct.
I'm horrified to recount that the Victorian Commission for Gaming and Liquor Regulation has allegedly done nothing to stop this shocking criminal misconduct.
Mr. Wilkie went on to say that regrettably the alleged misconduct at Crown is not limited to poker machines, with the casino allegedly aiming to fly under the radar of Australia's anti-money laundering agency AUSTRAC.
The whistleblowers also allege that the casino avoids AUSTRAC scrutiny of individuals involved in transactions over $10,000 by sometimes tolerating and even encouraging the misuse of identity documents. If these allegations are true, then Crown would be facilitating money laundering for any number of nefarious reasons, like tax fraud, drug running, and even terrorism.
The casino apparently also turning a blind eye to drug use and domestic violence on the premises. The MP says he's met the three whistleblowers and confirmed their identity. Mr. Wilkie says he believes many laws may have been broken and the allegations have enough weight to be taken seriously.
It's now up to the federal government and the Victorian state government to take strong and immediate action. Clearly there needs to be some sort of inquiry by the relevant law enforcement and regulatory agencies. And I'm also looking to the Parliament to form some sort of parliamentary inquiry into these allegations.
Federal opposition leader Bill Shorten agrees.
They sound very, very serious allegations. There are gambling regulators in Victoria, and no doubt they need to investigate it. They're serious allegations and they do deserve to be investigated.
Crown's issued a statement saying it rejects the allegations made today under parliamentary privilege by Andrew Wilkie concerning the improper manipulation of poker machines and other illegal or improper conduct at Crown Casino in Melbourne. Crown is calling on Mr. Wilkie to immediately provide to the relevant authorities all information relating to the alleged matters.
Aileen Phillips sending that report with a statement from Crown Casino. Still to come tonight, the Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte declares victory over IS-linked militants in the embattled city of Marawi.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hereby declare Marawi City liberated from the terrorist influence that marks the beginning of rehabilitation of the city.
That story coming up a little later. Don't forget our website, sbs.com.au/news. There you'll get all our content. You can also live stream our nightly bulletin at 6:30 via our website. 13 past 6. Western-backed Syrian forces and their allies on the ground have retaken the last IS stronghold, the Syrian city of Raqqa. But it may be some time before residents can return because the forces continue to use airstrikes as they try to drive the remaining IS fighters out of the city. Samantha Beniak-Brooks has more.
Celebrations have broken out in the city of Raqqa as Western-backed forces declare victory over IS in the city the militants had used as their Syrian capital. The victors have been raising Syrian flags over the last IS footholds after 4 months of operations. But despite the celebrations, the United States military says it can only confirm the Syrian Democratic Forces have retaken about 90% of Raqqa from the militants. Combined Joint Task Force spokesman Colonel Ryan Dillon says some IS or ISIS fighters remain.
We estimate there to be perhaps about 100 ISIS fighters that could remain in Raqqa. We have not seen much or heard of much reports of contact since the SDF reassumed their advance into the city after the civilians came out. But we still expect there to be remnants of ISIS in the city, and we expect there to be pockets of ISIS fighters there.
But Syrian Democratic Forces spokeswoman Jihan Ahmed says while little clashes against IS will continue, the focus now is on making the city safe for civilians.
We're still clearing the area. As we said, there were two remaining areas, the National Hospital and the Aswad Stadium. As you can see, the hospital was liberated this morning and we're standing in the stadium now. But now there will be very little clashes and large-scale clearing of the areas because the city is full of mines. And we must be very accurate in the defining process so families will be able to return to their city.
IS has lost most of its territory in Syria and Iraq this year after a string of victories in 2014. The group seized Raqqa from other Syrian rebels in early 2014, transforming the once vibrant metropolis into the hub of its brutal rule. Now, the fall of Raqqa is one more powerful symbol of the movement's collapse. But British Defence Secretary Sir Michael Fallon has told Sky News the plan is for the Western-backed coalition airstrikes to continue.
The end is near in Raqqa now. This was the head of the snake, the capital of this Daesh cult, and it now looks as if Raqqa has fallen. But RAF strikes will continue and against terrorist targets until we have terrorists flushed out of both Iraq and Syria, because only by pursuing this campaign can we be sure that we can reduce the threat to us here in Western Europe.
The fight for Raqqa has destroyed much of the city. Public buildings and even homes have been flattened by airstrikes or destroyed by gunfire. Colonel Ryan Dillon says there is now concern for the safety of the city itself, considering the damage to buildings and potential landmines left behind.
As far as what happens in Raqqa after ISIS has been cleared and Raqqa is liberated, the Raqqa Civil Council is already established and they're already eager to begin work to restore essential services. But also a very important note is that we must clear the remnants of all the explosives that have been left in Raqqa throughout this battle.
The international charity Save the Children says many of the 270,000 people who have fled the fighting will likely be stuck in aid camps for months or even years. But Jihan Ahmed says the civilians will be able to return within a month or two.
Civilian return will need, depending on the mines, maybe 1 month or even two. As we said, the safety of the civilians is the most important thing for us. We will clear the area and make sure that no mines remain. After that, this city is their home and they may return at any time.
Syrian Democratic Forces spokeswoman Jihan Ahmed, ending that report by Samantha Beniak-Brooks. The Philippines President Rodrigo Duterte has declared victory over IS-linked militants in the embattled city of Marawi. The city has been embroiled in nearly 5 months of fierce fighting. Here's Matt Kennellan.
More than 1,000 people have been killed and many more thousands displaced. But after nearly 5 months of bloodshed in the southern Philippine city of Marawi, President Rodrigo Duterte has declared the city liberated.
Ladies and gentlemen, I hereby declare Marawi City liberated from the terrorist influence that marks the beginning of rehabilitation of the city.
Mr. Duterte was speaking to soldiers, congratulating them for wrestling the city back from IS-linked fighters. The president says the liberation is not yet cause for celebration, though, and has apologised to the people of Marawi for the destruction. The military says 20 to 30 rebels remain inside the city, holding 20 people hostage. Major General Restituto Padilla has offered more detail.
The number of hostages that has been announced yesterday remain to be at about 20, which includes women and children. There also is still in existence about 20 to 30 armed elements, strugglers if you may call them, of the group. And among these are about 6 to 8 foreigners, foreign terrorists, to include the notorious foreign national, a Malaysian by the name of Dr. Mahmud, who was the financier of the Marawi siege. Dr. Mahmud remains to be one of our high-value targets in the operations still being conducted.
While Dr. Mahmud remains uncaptured, two other major targets were killed in a targeted operation earlier this week. Isnilon Hapilon, wanted by the United States, and Omar Maute, one of two brothers central to the alliance, were killed. Authorities say their bodies were recovered and identified. President Duterte placed all of the Mindanao province under martial law on May the 23rd, the night the Marawi siege started. In July, Congress voted to extend it to December. Despite the killing of Hapilon and Maute, Philippines Defense Secretary Delfin Lorenzana says martial law will not be lifted yet.
No, we are not talking about lifting martial law yet. Tingnan pa natin. We are only looking in the immediate aftermath of the killing of these two leaders. We may be announcing the cessation of hostilities in Marawi City within this week. And then after that, we'll find out, we'll assess what the entire Mindanao, if there is a need to recommend to the President the lifting of martial law.
Marawi is a mosque-studded centre of Islamic faith in the predominantly Catholic Philippines. At a public hall converted into an evacuation centre just outside Marawi, evacuees spoke of their joy at the two men's deaths. Local resident Seema Munting says she hopes everything may soon return to normal.
We're very happy because they have lost their leaders, so we can go back home to Marawi. I hope that all of them will be wiped out so that we can go home.
The conflict, almost 150 days old, has displaced the city's more than 460,000 residents, both inside and outside Marawi. Marawi is the capital of Lanao del Sur province. The Marawi operation is estimated to have cost the Philippines 5 billion pesos, or almost 125 million Australian dollars. Reconstruction of the city could start in January.
Matt Kinnellan with that report. Well, coming up, racism, unemployment and negative media coverage challenging South Sudanese Australians.
When you're looking for work, you know, you have to change the name on your resume, you know. Like, I do have an African name, but when I put it on my resume, I can't get work with that. They just look at it, they flip it over, unless I use a name such as John Smith.
22 past six. The National Broadband Network is blaming the rollout of the NBN for the highest number of complaints to the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman in 4 years. The Ombudsman's annual report, released today, shows that complaints about internet services have surpassed the number of complaints about mobile phones. Maya Jameson has the story.
There's been a staggering 40% increase in the number of complaints to the Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman this year, soaring past 150,000. But the National Broadband Network's Tony Brown says he believes the rollout of the NBN explains it.
For much of the last year, we've been activating about 50,000 premises every single week, and that's really what's causing the issues on the network, the sheer volume of activations coming on board. If we look at the actual number of complaints to the TIO, they actually make up only about 1% of total NBN activations.
The Ombudsman report shows complaints about services delivered on the network rose nearly 160% in 2016-17. Mr. Brown says the NBN is working on customer service with the internet service providers.
We're doing that. We're working with the retail service providers to improve the installation experience and make sure when the tech comes to your premises, they activate your premises first time. Also, when people are having issues on board the NBN network, we want to make sure we can identify those issues and really end the blame game between NBN and the RSPs.
Overall, the complaints from consumers and small businesses marked the highest total in 4 years. Telstra, which has 52% of the NBN market, received more than 2.5 times as many complaints as any other telecommunications provider, nearly 77,000. The next most complained about provider, Optus, received less than 30,000. Telstra too points to the rollout of the NBN as the reason behind the numbers. Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman Judy Jones says customer service has steadily led the list of complaints.
The top issues in our complaints are customer service, followed by billing and payments, and then faults. And that's been consistent across the years, so nothing particularly new in that this year.
She says what's new is that for the first time there were more complaints about internet services than mobile phones.
There's a lot of change in the industry, I think, that, and whenever there is major change, we tend to see more complaints. So a lot of structural change, 1,500 phone and internet providers, lots of new services and products being offered. Consumers and small businesses are increasingly reliant on technology to stay connected, to be educated and to run businesses.
Judy Jones warns, though, that while all complaints the Ombudsman handles are resolved, not all of them go in the customer's favour.
First step, complain to their provider and talk to them and explain carefully what the issues are and what they believe a reasonable resolution would be. Then work with the provider to try and resolve the issue. If that doesn't result in a satisfactory resolution, then certainly give my office a call or jump online.
Telecommunications Industry Ombudsman Judy Jones ending that report by SBS Finance Editor Ricardo Gonsalves. South Sudanese Australians continue to battle racism, limited language skills remain a barrier to employment, and talk of the so-called Apex Gang has hurt the community's image. But members of Melbourne's South Sudanese community have told a forum that there has been progress in dealing with the challenges of integration and settlement. Here's Luke Waters.
Around 30 members of Melbourne's South Sudanese community attended the forum in the city's southeast to discuss their experiences of everyday life in Australia. One of the biggest challenges raised was employment, and community member Jaffrey Cuttigar has passed on a drastic solution for people.
When you're looking for work, you know, you have to change the name on your resume, you know. Like, I do have an African name, but when I put it on my resume, I can't get work with that. They just look at it, they flip it over, unless I use the name such as John Smith.
Many of the forum told stories of still experiencing both casual and overt racism. Mavneth Tur provided a powerful example.
If we go to the shops, like, they think we're going to steal something, but, like, we're not really going to steal it.
we sort of get used to it a bit, but it still hurts inside. It's not everybody who's doing the wrong thing. Half of the people are trying, but when other people do a little thing wrong and then they sort of involve everybody, so yeah, it kind of hurts a bit.
Others at the forum said exaggerated reporting of the so-called Apex gang has damaged the community's reputation badly. A loosely affiliated crime group, it's often wrongly associated with solely the South Sudanese community. Community member James Luak says the impact is still being felt.
The impact that it did negatively is too much. There's a lot of people that lost their job. A lot of kids can't get a job anymore because obviously all the Sudanese kids are Apex, apparently. So it's obviously, it did a very, very big impact, and the gravity of it is very strong and it's affecting us daily.
Forum participants have offered possible solutions to the issues, including a review of education placement for new arrivals. Some highlighted what they see as a lack of engagement from Australian politicians as an issue. Others, like Marnus Diwal, have urged the community members to seize the assistance already on offer.
There are also a lot of like training provided by the governments, like a job seeker. They can even do your resume there. And you just got to make an effort to actually get the job.
Overall, the feeling at the forum was the South Sudanese story is gradually being better told and understood. Community member Ajulo Wan says self-produced and community-guided productions like the SBS drama Sunshine are generally seen as positive.
There are people who are doctors, there are social workers, you know, everything. The whole spectrum of life is there in the Sudanese community. So I think we also need to get into that business of writing our own stories for our people, by our people, so people can have can see us from our own perspective.
Ajulo Wan ending that story by Luke Waters. And the SBS crime drama Sunshine premieres tonight. It's a four-part drama which follows the life of Jacob, who's a young South Sudanese-Australian basketball player on the verge of being picked up by US talent scouts, but he finds himself caught up in a police investigation involving a teenage girl from one of Melbourne's affluent suburbs. You can see how it all unfolds from 8:30 tonight on SBS. Well, time now to check the news headlines for you. And one day after the release of the federal government's new energy policy, the argument continues over the promised savings on power prices. Former employees of Melbourne's Crown Casino have accused the organisation of misconduct. Crown denies those allegations. An explosion has hit a vehicle that has killed, and it's killed six people in southern Pakistan. And the former chairman of Brisbane Roar is attacking Football Federation Australia, accusing the governing body of undermining the A-League club. Well, that's SBS World News Radio for now. You can see Janice Peterson bringing you SBS News across Australia. You can live stream the bulletin on our website. Just go to sbs.com.au/news. There you've got all our stories and content. You can also get it in your Facebook news feed by liking our page, SBS World News. And if you're on Twitter, you can follow us, our Twitter handle at SBS News. I'm Greg Dyett. Thanks for listening.